And now it really is the off season, Andy. The Super Bowl is over. The Pro Bowl is no longer played after the Super Bowl. It's played before the Super Bowl. So this is it. No more football games until the preseason starts in August.
Yeah, we were laughing on the show the other day because right after the Super Bowl Sunday night, I'm channel surfing. I've seen all the post-game content I care to see. I don't need any more interviews. I saw the reaction. It must have been 11 o'clock at night. Joel Dreesen had tweeted out that officially is when your football depression starts right now at yes. this moment. And I find on ESPN2, which might as well have been ESPN, I don't know what's double ocho. I don't know what 16 is in Spanish. I mean, this is how far down the ESPN channel list we could go. They had the Johnsonville Cornhole Championships on. And it was so popular, there was nobody in the stadium they were in filming this thing. And the only people watching it were the contestants themselves, which made me wonder, why do we need TV coverage for this if none of their family members are even showing up to watch this event?
It reminds me of a sporting event I watched back when I was a kid in the Tampa Bay area, but it was on local cable access, not on one of the ESPN channels. It was the World Championships of Shuffleboard.
So we've got shuffleboard. It's almost like the Del Boca Vista games.
Yes.
If you wanted to do it. You know, they're doing Thursday night darts now, too. Are you a darts thrower? We were trying to figure that out.
I'm a darts thrower, yes. I enjoy it.
We thought you'd probably be pretty good at that. Did you throw any darts while you were on your travels the last 2-3 weeks?
No, unfortunately, the brew pub that I kept going to, I got to give a shout out to the northbound brew pub in South Minneapolis. Yeah, ironic. Northbound South Minneapolis. Really good spot. Went there a couple of nights. They had some poutine, which I've been on a kick for the last few months. Some good brews, some good ciders. I think seeing the Eagles in the game just got me on a kick. I had a couple of cheesesteaks there, but it was a good spot.
Okay, now, was this northbound brew pub where you heard the worst pickup lines of your life that you had to tweet about, or was that back at the hotel?
That was the hotel bar.
Figures. Sounds about right.
Yeah, the hotel bar at the Crowne Plaza, Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. I get there late one night, and that's where I start hearing the pickup lines. And I'd had a few drinks, so I can't really remember them all that well, but they were just pathetic. I
mean, did you have your head down a la Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber in the Aspen Bar, where you just wanted to lift it up and yell, "I don't know, and I don't care," and then followed up with, "Please stop hitting on this lady"? Who had the bad lines? Was it the girl trying to initiate something with the gentleman or the other way around?
It was the guy. I mean,
I figured.
Cliched, prototypical. It was the guy. He had the bad lines. And the girl was being courteous, but was having none of it. But he was persistent.
You kind of wanted to go into commentator mode there, didn't you? You wanted to give play-by-play?
Absolutely. I wanted to
sit. You kind of did on Twitter.
I wanted to sit there and start saying, okay, here's what you're doing wrong. Of course, yeah, like I'm an expert. Of course, I mean, I did get married, so.
Yeah. Hey, I was going to say, you got a kid.
Yeah. So I had some success over the years.
Yeah, you've done all right.
Yeah, I made it.
Well, it is officially the off season. I've been dying to do this podcast with you because every week that is eclipsed, it seems like I wanted to know what you thought at the Shrine Bowl, then at the Senior Bowl was its own sort of monster itself.
Yes.
And, of course, that was right before the Pro Bowl, fell in between the Super Bowl, came really at the perfect time for those of us in Denver sports radio, and in particular what you and I do on Orange and Blue 760. Then you go to the Super Bowl. You get a look at Nick Foles. You hear the rumor mill cranking out there. If you had to guess today, and, of course, this is always up for revision as we get closer to April or even at this point, March 15th, when they actually open up free agency. Your gut right now, as we sit here on, what is it, February 8th? I don't know what it is. Your gut, which way they go? Is it a veteran? Is it a rookie? What do you think they're doing?
I think you're working on multiple plans. I think they're going to take a shot at Kirk Cousins. And if that fails, you're looking for a bridge, and then it's one of the rookies. And if I was guessing on a rookie, I would guess Baker Mayfield.
Now, is that because of best available? Is that the guy you think they truly want of the four?
I think it's a little bit of best available, a little bit of who they want. Also, readiness to play sooner. I think of the quarterbacks coming out, Mayfield looks to me like the one who could step in and be ready the fastest. And it's, and I don't think you're sacrificing ceiling with Baker Mayfield. I still think he's a high-ceiling quarterback. But watching Mayfield in practice at the Senior Bowl, he's making the kind of advanced throws in terms of dropping the ball into small windows, anticipating the breaks of the receivers, looking off the safeties, the kind of advanced elite quarterback throws that I didn't see all the time from Josh Allen, and certainly we don't yet know if Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold can make, because we've only seen them at the college level to this point. We haven't necessarily seen them do all that. Now, Sam Darnold has run a pro-style offense. Josh Rosen, he's got the arm talent. We've seen him with a comeback against Texas A&M. He's got a high ceiling as well. I just think Baker Mayfield, even though the scheme he came from in Oklahoma is not analogous to the NFL, seeing what he did during Senior Bowl week in a pro-style offense, I think allayed some of the fears about the transition. I think he's much closer to being ready than even I thought. And you know I've been high on Baker Mayfield for a while.
So I think it's funny because there is a lot of talk about his scheme, but some of that maybe dies down a little bit with what the Eagles did in the Super Bowl. Now, in fairness, yes, I think people do have to understand they didn't go full college. They didn't scrap everything. There are still pro concepts in that offense, even when they tailored it to what Nick Foles could do. But they did add in a lot more RPO. Is the NFL, are you seeing a shift in the NFL? Let's be honest about it. We think in baseball, with a lot of the technology advancements and replay and all that stuff, they talk about it, how it's like turning the Titanic. Well, when it comes to updating your offensive kind of ideas and working in college concepts, I think the same analogy could apply. Do you feel like we're feeling the most significant shift, we're seeing the most significant shift in what coaches are willing to do to their offensive kind of output, their game plans, their philosophies, more than we've ever seen in a long time?
Yes, and I think within 5 to 7 years, the game may look radically different than it did, say, 5 or 7 years ago. I think we are in the midst of a radical change in the way pro football is played. But look, the history of football, and the history of the NFL in particular, when you have these changes, they usually happen at college first. Whether it's Air Coryell, which Don Coryell invented and tweaked at San Diego State before he took it to the St. Louis Cardinals and later to the San Diego Chargers, where, of course, it became most famous. But you can go all the way back to the T formation. Clark Shaughnessy at Stanford worked with George Halas a little bit to kind of teach him the nuances of that. And, of course, we know how he unleashed that in the 1940 NFL championship game, which caught Washington so off guard that it resulted in the most lopsided game in NFL history, the famous 73-0 final in this 1940 championship. So colleges have always been on the leading edge of these things, in part because you have a greater variance in terms of athletes and skills. So you can kind of capitalize on that a little bit. But also, just the simple numbers of it. You've got, you know, anywhere, you know, what is the number now right now? 128 schools or thereabouts playing FBS football. So, of course, you're going to have a greater diversity of tactics, greater diversity of ideas. And now what you face in the NFL is you have colleges with these scheme concepts, these RPO concepts, high schools with them as well. It's what these players know. So you're going to want to give them a game and adapt to what they do best. And, of course, you know, good coaching is tweaking what you do to what players do best. All that is part of why this stuff is coming. It may not be as full throttle as it is in college because you have more speed and athleticism. You don't have guys who are going to be accountants or teachers or whatever. When they get out of college in the NFL, you've got a high level at every position, but it's coming. Like Chris Harris Jr. said after the Broncos lost to Philadelphia 51-23, this stuff is coming. And thus, it certainly helps a Baker Mayfield because I would imagine that if Mayfield is starting for somebody this year, he'll run the ball 3, 5, 6 times a game. It's going to be an element. Lamar Jackson. Now, I don't think he's going to run the ball 18 times the way he did at Louisville, but when he starts playing quarterback for somebody, I'd say he's going to run it 10 times a game.
It's going to be interesting to watch how it all changes. The coaches have no choice about it, and that's really, I mean, ultimately, that's why you're going to have to change. If you're going to be a dinosaur and refuse to do it, then you're probably not going to have a place here, as you said, in 5 or 6 years, because you have to draw from the pool, and that's what everybody's doing. That said...
And it can be done. Mike, look what Mike Shanahan did with RG3 in 2012.
Yeah.
You can, you know, old school coaches who made their hay in this league with philosophies from a decade or two or more ago, if they're smart, like Mike Shanahan certainly is, they'll adapt. And, of course, we look at the success that RG3 had in that year, and that shows how a coach who's been around a long time can tweak philosophies for that kind of quarterback, that kind of player.
But the problem is that was 1 year. It didn't last much long after
that. He tore
that,
his ACL, and of course, we know how RG3 circumvented the Shanahans to go to Daniel Snyder, and that caused problems as well. I maintain that if things had just stayed on normal level and it had been a normal owner-coach-player relationship, that RG3 would still be in the NFL, might still be playing under a Shanahan right now. That's my theory on it.
Well,
the success that year was undeniable.
Oh, it was. There's no doubt about it.
And there was a plan. There was a long-term plan for him.
But it was new. It was new. The NFL hadn't seen it. You know, I'd be curious to see how they would have adapted to it. Would have it held the same success on a year-to-year basis? We'll never know. I like what the Eagles are doing. I like the fact that whether it's Foles or Wentz, there's been a little bit of both. Because I still think there's some philosophies you have to adhere to. And again, the reason why the Eagles are successful at it, we're all stuck on Wentz. Getting another look at them, you got to remember, they've got a good offensive line. They run the ball incredibly
effectively.
And they
have weapons all over the place. Yeah, it's Alshon Jeffery. It's Zach Ertz, Trey Burton, Jay Ajayi, LeGarrette Blount.
Three deep in the backfield. That Clements kid looked good.
Corey Clement was amazing on Sunday in the Super Bowl. This is a pick-your-poison offense. And so... this is one thing I'll say. You know, there's a lot of buzz about Nick Foles. Will a team trade for him? First of all, I'm not sure that the Eagles are going to part with Nick Foles because they're in a perfect position. Carson Wentz is on his rookie contract. Nick Foles' contract isn't onerous. You can have both of them. And if you have Nick Foles on your roster, Carson Wentz can take his time coming back. His rehab timeline takes him right up to the regular season. And you know, if there's a setback, all of a sudden you're talking about October, maybe even November. If you hang on Nick Foles, you're not worried about that. You can tell Carson Wentz, okay, take your time. Don't rush back. Don't do something to make it worse. Go back to RG3. I don't think it helped him trying to rush back in 2013.
No, the problem you're going to run into, though, is Pro Football Talk laid out. They have no cap. Like right now, they're over the cap.
Yes.
They're going to have to get rid of guys just to get to the cap. And so what are you willing to sacrifice for that? But to your point.
But do you really want to go into the season potentially with Nate Sudfeld as your quarterback if Carson Wentz has a setback? I mean, you're trying to defend a championship here and build off them and build further off the momentum you've established.
I get that.
You've got the window right now.
But you also have good teams aren't afraid to look forward, and you also have a guy that's never going to be valued like this. If Carson Wentz is – let's flip it. If Carson Wentz is healthy beginning of the year and Foles goes back to the bench and then you decide somewhere near the midseason you want to trade him.
Or I'll give you another thing. This is when they may trade him. Preseason.
Right. Lose a QB.
When they traded Sam Bradford. They did this in 2016. Remember, they shocked everybody when they traded Bradford to Minnesota in the wake of the Teddy Bridgewater injury. There's your window right there, Andy.
Could be. But I guess to get back to where it relates to Bronco fans, I like Foles a lot, and I like what he did during the playoffs, and I don't think you can dismiss it. I also don't think you ignore some of his past history, but there's some good in his past history. The problem is that was aggressive play calling. That was 2, 3, 4th downs that you're going for.
It was house money.
Yeah.
They played the NFC Championship and the Super Bowl with house money.
They just didn't care. But you've got to be aggressive like that. You've got to be creative like that. You've got to have, like you said, the dynamic playmakers. Foles is not perfect with every pass. Guys are making plays for him now. If you choose to keep Emmanuel Sanders, if you choose to keep Demaryius Thomas, I think you at least have the outside playmakers, but I don't know that you have that kind of run game. We certainly know you don't have that kind of offensive line.
Tight end
and
is
you've
the
got to
big,
solve tight
big
end.
Thing.
And maybe that's Jake Butt.
But that's
maybe
one
it's
guy.
Else.
But the Eagles go deep at tight end. Remember, they didn't, have, they didn't have Zach Ertz in the game against the Broncos, and it was no problem.
Yeah, they've constructed the roster well. Now, it's cost them money, and we'll see how they hold up, and we'll see how they defend the title. But you can't – I'll tell you this. The Foles, not with Foles, the Eagles with Foles, with Wentz, it doesn't matter. They had an identity. They tweaked it a little bit for Foles with a couple more RPOs. But nonetheless, they had an identity they didn't veer away from, and they weren't afraid to run their normal offense once he went in there, a la the Broncos in John Elway's day. Bubby Brister still was running the West Coast offense in 1998 when the Broncos were able to survive that stretch without John Elway. The Broncos right now, to me, need to figure out what their identity is. The Patriots have an identity. Why do they find every little midget receiver or undersized white receiver that maybe is not anything to anybody else? Because they know how to use them, and they know how it's going to fit into their system. More than anything in this offseason, I think you have to re-identify what you're at. Is it the West Coast, or is it at least a hybrid of the West Coast? Is it whatever it is? I hope you can establish what it is that you are, because I think that is as much to success as some of the other stuff we talk about, the quarterback, the auxiliary pieces. The Steelers have been successful forever. It's basically been off the same system that a bunch of the same the guys, different guys have coached the same system. You got to figure out what that is here. Now, here it's been West Coast. All the proud history and the three Super Bowl trophies came from West Coast-based offenses.
Although the third one, don't forget, you had elements of the offense the previous 3 years, the Peyton Manning offense that were still involved with that. And sometimes you need to go up-tempo and spread out and go with what Peyton Manning did best. Go back to that Kansas City game in week two of that year. That wasn't pure West Coast in 2015. You are right. The other two championships, straight up West Coast.
When you won the playoff games, though, it felt more West yes. Coast than it had in Manning.
They had a power gear in those games that they didn't always have. And certainly you go back to 2012. And that playoff in January 2013, that playoff game against Baltimore, and if you'd had that power gear that day, you would have won that game and possibly won the Super Bowl.
You'd have picked up a first down, likely, with you were a yard away from when you thought Ronnie Hilliard was your, or Ronnie Hillman, excuse me, was your best option to go get 1 yard when it was the last first down of the season you needed to go and make sure Baltimore didn't get the ball back, but... That's for another day. And look,
that's
I'm not
another
saying,
podcast because we could have a debate
oh,
about
that game.
There's
what ifs all over that game.
Yeah.
Here's the thing for me, though. I'm not saying go back to the straight West Coast, but some derivative of it. You know, Kyle Shanahan's not running the classic West Coast. He's added another layer to it.
A lot of shotgun stuff.
Just something. But just know what you are. I don't even care what it is, but just know what you are and build around it.
How many times did we hear from players on offense in the first 10 games of the season last year, first 11 weeks? Oh, what's our identity? I feel like we heard it from C.J. Anderson all the time. The one thing I'll say down the stretch on offense, I felt like they figured out what they were. I felt like I understood. I felt like they knew what they were. There were stretches in that Washington game. Obviously, it was a loss. But in the first half, when they got the nice, they got power running going, they were running downhill. The Colts game before that, I felt like the offense was starting to find its identity.
Well, that's because Bill Musgrave came in and simplified some things. Unfortunately, I love Mike McCoy, the guy. He's great to talk to. I still think he's a good football coach.
Yes.
But the level of stubbornness that he showed during these 10 games, I will never understand. And I think the problem is I still go back to people when they ask you what went wrong. I think Trevor and his brains fooled McCoy into thinking you could run your whole playbook after the Dallas game. And nobody was ready to do it, including Trevor. And you wouldn't break away from it. You wouldn't go away from the three wide. I will say this. You are not a three wide team with this offensive line. That has to be accepted by whoever's running things. And I think Musgrave accepted that.
He found
other ways to get other people involved without having to go three wide.
It's not a West Coast offense, but do you remember back in 2012, the base package that year, even though they did plenty of three wide, the base package was two tight ends, Jacob Tammy and Joel Dreesen. that was the starting offense most games.
Well, and you weren't giving away your hand.
Yeah.
Because they both could block a little bit. Now, they were never... Joel was more the blocker than Jacob. Jacob would tell you that. But Jacob was effective enough. He was kind of like Shannon Sharp as far as blocking. He could get the job done
and
enough.
And Joel was effective enough as a target.
Exactly. If you left him open... Matter of fact, he made some big plays. He made a big play against the Patriots in the playoff game the next year in the AFC Championship, I want to say. I know Owen
Tammy
Daniel,
had the touchdown.
Yeah, Joel
was hurting by then, though, remember?
Yeah, Joel, in 2013, I just remember, Joel, to your point, he
but
was
But Joel
effective
made
enough.
A lot of plays in 2012.
He was effective enough where if you threw to him, he was going to make you pay. And that's, you know, that's maybe that's
need...
Austin Traylor this year, I don't know.
Well, it may be Austin Traylor. You're still hoping for something for Jeff Heirman, but my goodness. You realize this is the last year of Jeff Heirman's rookie contract?
Yeah, it's been...
This is year four.
It's a sobering thought. How about I put it that way? Although I do think, as you talk
about... It's about Jake Butt.
I do think it is about Jake Butt, but I do think if you're going to talk about guys that kind of showed at the end of the year, it's not like Heirman disappeared. Heirman was at least there for some plays. Now, not to the level of where you drafted him, and I'm not comfortable enough saying he's come around, but at least he's earned the right to start the year on the roster and you see what you've got.
It's also another good tight end class, though. Maybe not as spectacular as last year's. I called last year's tight end class the 83 quarterbacks of tight ends class, and we'll see how it develops over the next few years. But there are guys. I mean, obviously, the top of the draft are receiving tight ends like, you know, Dallas Goedert out of South Dakota State, Mark Andrews from Oklahoma, Hayden Hurst out of South Carolina. But a guy like Mike Gesicki out of Penn State is a versatile player who flashed at the Senior Bowl. Troy Fumagalli out of Wisconsin. He's that guy who can kind of be the blocker and the pass catcher. He can kind of be that Joel Dreesen type, perhaps. There are players that could be effective guys for you because you do need multiple tight ends. And in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, maybe a way for the Broncos to get where they want to go is that base package of two tight ends, and then you supplement it with three wide. Then the question becomes, who's your slot receiver? Is it someone who's already on hand? Now, Carlos Henderson, I know they'd hope for him to be the slot receiver, but he's still more of a vertical speed guy. You wonder if maybe he's better suited to being on the outside, and of course he had, you know, his issue last month. Or if you're looking in the draft for a slot guy, maybe you're looking at Deshaun Hamilton or Braxton Berrios or somebody like that.
Well, it's just funny you bringing up even the receiver candidates. It just tells you why you have to figure out what your philosophy is and stick to it. Is Henderson going to work in what you want to do? I hope so. I don't know. I hope you're good enough you can survive any system. That's what you want to be. You know, Cody Latimer, I think, is intriguing. I think Cody Latimer did enough at the end of last year to earn his way back.
He's certainly, as an outside guy, yes.
And maybe he's your answer if you decide to move on from 10. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with Emmanuel Sanders. Maybe they don't do anything. I don't know if they're going to do anything with Demaryius Thomas, but it feels like this roster, which makes the quarterback question I asked you the hardest, is set to go some change, a facelift a little bit. Maybe not drastic change, but I think some familiar names that have defined the last 4 years easily could be missing by the time we open up OTAs.
And that's what makes, I think, the next 4 or 5 weeks so interesting because, you know, we count down to the new league year coming next month. But I think the roster is going to look a bit different even by the start of the new league year.
And that's why when you say go after Kirk Cousins, I'm fine if you go after Kirk Cousins. You just have to accept that part of the reason why you think he'd be a good fit here may not be here anymore. You may be missing a very big name offensively.
And then you have to replace that either in free agency or the draft. Yeah. That's what you do. You've changed your needs. You've created a new need.
You still have to somehow shore up the line. And I think it's great to draft young guys, and maybe they show up. That's still – I don't know what's the trickier prospect, trying to project the quarterbacks or the linemen to the NFL anymore, because they are still going to want you to go for it. All the Eagles did go for it. They mauled the Patriots for a while.
Is Nate Solder viable?
I would take him if he could come, but I'd have to wonder if Tom Brady just found a way to get Josh McDaniels to stay in New England, and I have to imagine he had some hand in that. Do you think he's going to let his left tackle walk out the door as he has 3 or 4 years left? I don't see that being realistic. I'd love to see Big Nate come here, and I've got it on good authority. Nate would love to come here. But I don't know that just because he thought before the season they were probably done with him, that doesn't mean that that's the way they feel.
But if you get Nate Solder and Kirk Cousins, to get both of those guys, you're probably talking about roughly $43, $44 million of average annual value.
Yeah, and I think you have $27 million right now as your base before you start making alterations to the roster.
And you have RFAs to pay. Shaq Barrett, Matt Paradis. You're going to have your draft class. You're going to the exclusive rights guys, that's kind of negligible at this point in the year because basically what you're going to pay them, you're going to take off, you know, because your top 51 are the only ones counted toward the cap in the offseason. So you give one of those guys a contract, you take another guy off, and there's a little bit of a wash there in the accounting of the offseason.
To me, I'd love to just start with figuring out the quarterback, and I don't know that we're going to do that as quickly as I'd like to. It's great to bring in. If you get Kirk Cousins, I'm fine with it. I'm for it. Whatever. I'd love to see Kirk in a draft pick, but the problems mount from
but
there.
But then your draft pick is like a second or third round guy. Maybe it's the guy I talked a lot about, Kyle Laletta out of Richmond.
Yeah.
Who flashed the Senior Bowl. Who I think would be a perfect complement to Kirk Cousins.
Well,
they're similar types of quarterbacks.
Or you just go ahead and you ride out Trevor Siemian at $1.9 million as your backup.
Or you see if Paxton Lynch develops.
I hope it all comes together. I hope they have one heck of a quarterback competition. I really do. Because it's only going to be better
That you're not having a quarterback competition if you sign Kirk Cousins.
No, you're right. It's done. Which is why I don't know that Paxton's in the equation. Because right now, he's going to cost more than Trevor. And Trevor's the guy with 22 starts. And if you just need a backup, to me, a $1.9 million backup is more attractive than a $4-whatever million backup. As far as the cap hit. Now, do you go ahead and do
One's
that?
Got another know. Year left on his contract, though. 1 year versus 2 years. Doesn't that matter?
Not to me. If I'm thinking about putting a guy in there, and look, maybe they're both on the roster because you're probably going to keep three regardless. But to me, the guy that's got starts is going in ahead of time. I don't know, unless Paxton, I would imagine Paxton regardless would be around through OTAs. And if he shows you something different, then great. If he shows you that he's bought into the quarterback lifestyle, because in my opinion, it's not a physical thing with him. You've got to live the quarterback lifestyle. And what that means, you are first in the building doing real work, watching real tape, and being ready to be the leader who explains the game plan to the other guys if you need it explained to you. So if he
some
does
guys
that,
do
then
get
great.
It later than others. And I will say this for Paxton Lynch. We talked about more RPOs, more college-style concepts coming into the league. Wouldn't that help Paxton Lynch?
Sure, it would help. And I know you're working. I don't want the guy. I want you to work out because, honestly, Kirk Cousins is probably that could be fantasy talk. You could be talking. We might as well be sitting on Santa's lap right now because we don't know how that's going to work out. All right? The bottom line, and guess
what? So
what
you're saying is you go to Santa's lap, are you wishing for Kirk Cousins?
You're wishing for Kirk Cousins, but you may not get him. And if you don't get him, Andrew, I don't know what else is out there. It is a scary drop-off from him, especially if Case Keenum gets tagged.
It's Briggs, you guys.
Yeah, well,
it's Josh McCown, Ryan Fitzpatrick, trading for Tyrod Taylor.
No, see, here's the deal. I'm glad you brought him up. We did our Make the Case on the show the other day for Tyrod Taylor. We had guys on in Buffalo. The description we've got of Tyrod Taylor and what went down last year was the more he threw, the less successful they were, and the less they won.
We had that
30
stat.
Passes.
We had that
passes.
Stat, yes.
Are you kidding me? 30 passes? In the modern NFL, you mean to tell me that if I go over 30 passes, your record is 2-13? I can't go that way. I'm not looking at you. Why am I giving up Trevor Siemian at his $1.9 million for basically the guy with the same stat because he runs a little more? Right. That's just it. So ultimately, if we get
to this
point.
You had an offensive coordinator fired in the midst of that whole thing.
Right. All I'm saying is.
Like during the season. Remember that early in the 2016 campaign?
My point being. If Paxton can prove that he can put the work in and he becomes ultimately, because it is year three, to be fair to the kid, they said it'd take 3 years. The problem is.
He's at the fork in the road moment, though.
He is.
No doubt.
The problem is, I don't think you've put in the work to speed up the 3 years. And that's my biggest issue with it. And they tried it. They did so many things to try to put you on the field last year, and it didn't work out. So I hope he can change the narrative. I hope he can become everything you were promised to be, because ultimately that's the best thing for the Broncos. Not you and I both know throwing money and taking a risk at five on another quarterback, not ending up the same way, none of that's the best scenario.
But you can't stop trying to get that quarterback.
No, you've got to go out until you have one.
Yeah, it's an okay investment until you find that guy. It's too important to shortchange. And I mean, look, if you haven't figured that out, if the best guy on your board is a quarterback at number five and you haven't addressed it long-term in free agency, then go pick that guy. And are there hurt feelings? So what? You can't worry about that. Go pick that guy. Keep doing it until you get it right. It's too important to take any other philosophy, I think.
But wouldn't you, this is what I like about the Kirk Cousins scenario, or even if you traded for Nick Foles, you and I don't sit on the same place as Nick Foles, but I'll just say this. Give me an option, and even Case Keenum would fall into this. Give me an option where you pick what you want at five, not what you think you have to have. Because that's how teams set themselves back. You pass on what you know is the best player in this draft because I have to have a quarterback.
Who do you think is the best player in this draft?
I'm not sure I know yet. I thought it was Saquon Barkley, but I'm starting to see opinions to the other side of that right now.
Quentin Nelson.
You think?
Yeah, I think it might be a guard. What?
I think you could be right, but that doesn't.
I know the value says don't pick a guard early. Okay. I get that. This is not about the value. This is about best player in the draft.
Here's the thing.
I think Quentin Nelson is the best player in this draft.
So then let me throw this at you. Tyler and I have been having this discussion all week on the show.
What does he think of Quentin
Nelson?
We've
basically been doing, well, he likes him. He likes McGlinchey. He likes them all. But, but again, it goes back to these old school. It's almost like you and I, all of us that have been around for more than 20 years, we have to come to grips with the new math, if you will. Tyler was asking me the other day. He said, if you believe Nick Foles is the guy, the debate is not, is he the guy, but if you believe he's the guy, he's a Super Bowl MVP now. He's, for the most part, he's thrown twice as many touchdowns as interceptions. He's got a 60% career. He tags all the boxes as far as the stats for the stats.
Yes, he does.
Okay? And he's shown an ability to lead a team. Whatever. If you think he's the guy, why wouldn't you go give up the fifth pick for him? Because, again, if you say give up the fifth pick in a trade for him, my stomach curl, right? It's like the kick in the gut reaction because, what, you don't do that. But ultimately, Tyler said, why don't we see the illogic in our logic? And we've been talking so much about this. This goes back to your point. If your guy is the best guy, if a guard is the best guy in the draft, then why aren't you taking him? Just because he plays guard? He's the best guy.
Because you're feeling like, okay, I can maybe get him a little bit later.
But can you?
But you're also...
But if you don't get him, do you regret it?
And the other thing you're looking at is the difference between one player and the next player. For example, okay? Let's say you really like Will Hernandez. Is the difference between Quentin Nelson and Will Hernandez less than the difference between, say, Saquon Barkley and Darius Geis?
Okay. Whoever your second guy is.
Or Bradley Chubb and Arden Key or whoever you say is the number two pass rusher, edge rusher, Marcus Davenport, for example.
I'm just saying, Andrew, is it not funny, though, that we value – what I love about the time of year that you and I are in is all of a sudden the draft picks become the most important thing in the world, even over players with a resume, and no way do you trade this or that for this guy or that guy and whatever. And, you know, I can remember Mike Kliss bounced it off us a week ago that if the Broncos were to take a run at Alex Smith, it'd have to be Aqib Talib and a number two. I laughed. I thought that's too high. But the bottom line is, how many times is the fifth pick? I can think of Heath Shuler. I'm pretty sure he was the fifth pick. He did nothing. He did nothing for that team. He was washed out quicker than Gus Frat, the seventh rounder. That's, I mean, I'm just saying, Andrew, it's just that kind of funny time of year.
Washington has twice in the last 24 years shown why you hedge at quarterback and pick another guy in the later rounds. RG3, Kirk Cousins,
that's true.
Shuler, Gus Frat. Heath Shuler was in Congress, and Gus Frat was still playing. Yeah, Heath Shuler had become a congressman from Western North Carolina, and Gus Frat was still in the league.
Look, it's here's the situation. It's you're right. You've got to go all in on figuring out who the quarterback is, and that's fine. And you and I know they're going to do it anyway. I don't want to have to be a forced pick at five. I just don't. And especially if there's a run on quarterbacks, because I don't know what's going to go on. I don't know how this not having a head coach all of a sudden is going to affect the Colts. Some people think that because Ballard is there, that it'll be just fine. The GM will be just fine. He's still putting his draft board together. Well, you kind of got to know who you're drafting for, don't you?
Ideally.
Know? We don't know.
They have assistant coaches.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that great? Your DC's already there. Man. That's not a mess at all.
Wow. We had a thing on first and 10 at 10 where even before all this went down, we referred to Josh McDaniels as the wild card, like Charlie from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, I heard it. It was very funny. I wish we were on Sirius at the time so you could have played the uncut version.
The whole clip. Wild card! Anyway, turned out, we jokingly said, well, Josh McDaniels is going to be the wild card. He's going to go to Indianapolis and call up John Lynch and say, hey, what will it take to get Jimmy Garoppolo? Two ones and Andrew Luck. And so Ryan Edwards and I sort of played GM. He played Chris Ballard. I played John Lynch for a bit. It was a fun little bit of role play. And then about 7 hours later, the ultimate wild card, like Charlie, cutting the brakes. In effect, Josh McDaniels cutting the brakes on the Indianapolis Colts, calling wild card blank and jumping out the back of the van.
And it was... Well, it was a perfect move. It was a perfect show clip, I should say, not movie clip for the occasion. But I just think every quarterback situation is interesting somehow, which is not what you want if you're the Denver Broncos. There's no guy that you can just say, on March 15th, we're ringing your phone and we're going to get a deal done. Because even the Redskins could still putz around with Cousins and we'll see what happens.
And if they franchise tag him,
then I call the Chiefs and say, are you sure you want to wait on that? Because we'll do the deal right now.
Yeah, they haven't consummated the Alex Smith
trade. They can't. They can't until
that
circus is done.
They can't, exactly.
And if you franchise him, you can't have a $35 million backup.
If any team was capable of it.
Oh, it would be the Redskins. just because apparently this is the biggest game of I told you so ever. Kirk Cousins, as much as we all laughed at the big scream, the big do you like that, do you like that, Tyler confirmed do you like that was directed at Bruce Allen, or at, help me, is it Bruce Allen, the GM there?
Bruce Allen.
That's who Kirk was yelling do you like that at. And now Bruce is telling him no, he didn't like it. So I'm going to franchise tag you because I don't care for the way you spoke to me in the hallway. This is like a Seinfeld episode with NFL people involved.
They're like, it's like kids.
This is like Jerry's parents telling the Costanzas, you can't move to Del Boca Vista. There's not a room in the house. And they're moving there to prove that he can move to Del Boca Vista.
Going to be in the clubhouse. Going to be all over that shuffleboard court. Wait, how did we get two shuffleboard references in?
Well, you know, it's the off season, we're going to go to Florida.
That's right.
Land of the old.
Oh, boy. Well, on behalf of Andy Lindahl, this is Andrew Mason. Thanks for joining us this week on the Horsing Around podcast. We'll talk to you next week.